Rewind. Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Now we wait at Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Good morning and welcome to Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSF.ca, streaming worldwide. I want to acknowledge that this work takes place on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh people. That is a connection, too, to our September 30th holiday, where we are looking at the truth in reconciliation. Since all the people that take part in the Power Back Age program, where we had a celebration of our second anniversary, you're going to hear a recording. So without further ado, I'm going to take you into our September 30th Powered by Age Creativity Meeting. Good morning and welcome to Powered by Age, Canada's longest running senior-led podcast. It's our birthday. This is our second anniversary, October 1 in 2019. The first four episodes of a podcast was created at the 411 Center. And then we recruited with a small grant from the city to recruit people from six senior centers, as well as some writing organizations and other places in Vancouver. So when we had our first birthday, the shutdown was on and we switched over to playing with Zoom, and then Zoom became a really comfortable form for people to participate in. So since then we have done, I think, Leslie, are we at 75, 76?
74.
So next week we'll have our 75th anniversary. It's celebration time. And sometimes I'm a little silly, but I think it's a notable thing because most podcasts for seniors is telling you how to do something or think other people are talking to you about places to go to, things to do. Here, we've taken issues. When we went to a podcast mode and when we were moving physically around to other centers, we generated a list of 20 topics, 20 issues. Well, we've covered all those 20 issues. So now we're in a mode where we're finding out from new people that are being recruited and joined or referred, what are other issues that people would like to see us do as workshops, forums. We had a forum on housing. We had a forum on training, you know, why seniors should still be able to get training. So we'll be generating that list and talking about that a bit more next week. But today, what we're going to be doing is awareness as well as activities. Two things that start with A. We're going to have awareness and recognizing and celebrating this new holiday. It's a holiday being celebrated in a different way, which is understanding some of the reconciliation issues, the significance of this new September 30th national holiday. And then we also just spreading the awareness that tomorrow, October 1st, is the United Nations Recognition Day for older persons, and we'll be hearing a proclamation for that from Nancy. So our tech support today, Jesse's going to carry us through. We're going to sing Happy Birthday first to get started. Wow. wonderful. So, as you know, that was Stevie Wonder's song that he wrote as a tribute to Dr. King, which is a connection to the fact that we're going to be writing tribute poems that might be for a senior, for an event, or a thing. Okay, moving into our next awareness segment, we have two short videos that we're going to see around what does orange shirt mean? What's the significance of the orange shirt? To begin, our tech genius, Jesse, is going to take us to those.
I was 6 years old when they took me to a residential school. I remember the day walking toward that school with my mother, and it was a silent walk, and I was so afraid. 20 or 30 little kids herded into the showers. And then your body being painted in white liquid of some kind, your hair cropped and then doused in kerosene. And that was pretty traumatizing. The school held roughly 220 people, half boys, half girls, and we were segregated. If I was caught waving at my sister, there'd be a punishment for it. And so as a result of that segregation, I never really learned any social skills that young people should be learning as they grow up. From a religious and spiritual perspective, of course, the churches lobbied hard to convert indigenous people, aboriginal people. They said that we were heathen and pagan. They targeted language in those things we had learned through all of millennia to know where we came from, to know who we were, as something that had to be eliminated. Before that time, I lived in a place called Quiastems. They call it Guilford Island now. We harvested from the forest all of the animals that we needed to provide us sustenance. And from the ocean in front of us as well, all of the species of whales and mink and fish. And I had a connection to the environment around us. And so after having spent years in those schools, by the time we were ready to leave, most of us were pretty broken. Many of us, including myself, descended into addictions, alcoholism, and violence, and it was pretty difficult. Those schools lasted for over 100 years. There were over 150,000 little children. And the last school that closed in Canada was in 1996 in Saskatchewan. There was a history on this land that had been absolutely ignored. Nobody knew about the residential school legacy. Nobody knew about the intent of the Indian Act, the chronic challenges now facing Aboriginals. And we're starting to accept the idea that we have the shared history for which we all are responsible for. When the Truth and Reconciliation Commission report was submitted, I was in the room when Justice Murray Sinclair, the chair of the commission, denounced Canada. He had just recited a litany of intensive harms against Aboriginal people. And when he said, Canada, you have committed cultural genocide, there was just a silence in that room. And then all of a sudden it erupted in euphoria. We said, survivors want an apology from the Prime Minister in the House of Commons. And I was there and I heard the words, I'm sorry. And then I couldn't see because my eyes were just flowing with tears. I was so happy that somebody had said, I'm sorry. Canada, by the way, is the only Western country that has had a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So we're trying to look through a new lens. We and Canadians, we as an Aboriginal, we celebrate each other, everybody cheering each other up as we move toward a more equal, prosperous future for all of us. My name is Chief Robert Joseph, and I believe that Truth and Reconciliation is Canada.
Bonjour, Tansi Anin, Jim Thunder Nidishinakaz, Sachiko Lake Nindunji. Hello, my name is Jim Thunder, and I'm the board chair of Reconciliation Thunder.
And I'm Kate McKenzie. I'm a volunteer and researcher with Circles for Reconciliation.
From the time of the first discovery of the children in unmarked graves in Kamloops, BC, and the subsequent discoveries until now, Canadians have been thinking about the horrible tragedy of residential schools. The legacy of residential schools has left a lasting impact. And so Canadians today are asking, how can I respond and what can I do?
In 2015, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission published the 94 Calls to Action to answer that exact question. Tragically, 6 years later, many Canadians still have not read the 94 Calls to Action.
These calls are not just for the government. These calls are designed for any member of society. This is where we need your help. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission's final report says that reconciliation cannot be left up to the government, the courts, and the churches alone. Dialogue and action needs to take place in communities all across the country. Reconciliation must take place across all sectors of Canadian society.
We are living in a time when social media can be a powerful tool for collective action and collective impact. We are launching the 94-94 campaign to challenge Canadians to read the 94 calls to action and choose at least one to act on.
Starting on June 29, Circles for Reconciliation and Reconciliation Thunder will be posting one call to action every day for each of the days leading up to Orange Shirt Day on September 30th. We'll be posting these calls on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. If you're not on social media, then you can go to reconciliationthunder.org and sign up to receive these calls every day via email. This campaign includes a challenge for corporate and community leaders. So beyond sharing these calls every single day for 94 days, the real potential for this campaign is when leaders like you organize the people that you lead into conversations, where you move beyond discussions and into action.
Circles for Reconciliation is a full and equal partnership between Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples with the aim of establishing trusting, meaningful relationships. Each circle meets once a week for 75 minutes for 10 weeks in a row, and involves 5 Indigenous and 5 non-Indigenous participants.
Reconciliation Thunder is a nonprofit established to provide online resources to community leaders. These online resources empower leaders to address institutional racism, act on the Truth and Reconciliation Commission's 94 Calls to Action, and create long-term change in their communities. The 94-94 campaign is simple, but it's profound. When enough people get behind a simple vision like this, we can take all of Canada one step closer towards reconciliation.
Visit circlesforreconciliation.ca or reconciliationthunder.org for more information on how you can get involved.
Okay, thank you. It'll take a couple of minutes to see if what responses either of you have to what you've seen and that call for action.
It's intense. It's very intense. It takes takes some time to process it, takes some time to absorb it. I did go on to look up the 94 calls to action, and I'm curious now that I appreciate seeing that video to see the little booklet, and I'm going to search to see if I can find a copy of that booklet. And I had listened to another video where they suggested to go through the calls to action and to choose, you know, perhaps one or two that resonate more specifically and make a commitment to those steps. So, and I live in Nanaimo, I'm on Vancouver Island, and there's an event going on downtown at the waterfront, and they're right there lifting up and placing a totem that they've been working on for this past year. And I'd heard there's thousands of people down there, so it's somber day. And at the same time, I guess, opportunity for insight, knowledge, call to action, like you suggested. And I'd say, I think for myself personally, just time to process and then figure out what my responsibility is and what I can do to contribute and make a difference.
The calls for action are available online. You can Google them.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. So if anybody's listening that's interested, yeah, just Google it.
Thank you, Lennon.
And then also the...
And what would the title be? Like, exactly what words do we Google? Just the Reconciliation?
Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Okay, thank you.
I've been able to find it just by Googling TRC, Calls to Action. And it's the top thing that shows up.
Did you say TRC?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's remarkable, as I said, for a government to set a holiday for people to take a pause. It's different from, you know, beach holidays, party holidays, but to really think and understand that these 94 calls were made, 6 years have passed and nothing has happened, and to just make ordinary people take a look and see what we can do. So as we're talking about topics or things that we might want to do in the future, maybe Nancy or others can highlight some things from those that's something that we could do as part of our podcast. Fufula, did you have a comment?
Well, I am just like horrified at things that actually happened. And even now, I just can't believe any of that, you know, all these years. And I don't know, my heart just goes out to those little children and all that hatred that was in there, you know. And I don't know, I mean, how do we make things right, you know? Like, it's very difficult. It's something that's happened over the years, and now we're trying to make things all right for all of them. And I can just imagine what they're going through, and I can really understand their emotional trauma and why some of them are in a situation as they are right now. I can very well understand, like, if my child had been taken away from me, and I can't imagine how I would survive that, you know. Just to me, it's just incredible that such things could have even happened in those times. So spreading awareness, I think, is all right. It's really good that we are doing all that now, you know, but what happened in the past actually happened, and I don't know if there's any way to compensate any of that now. Those are my thoughts on that.
One of the shocking things is, and, you know, when I've talked to people about this, they said, oh, you know, this was generations ago, you know, but the last residential school closed in 1996. Let's just let that sink in. That's this present generation are still suffering the legacy of that in some parts of Canada.
And people, some of the videos that I saw, people who are in our plus 50 age group, some of them, you know, were children who experienced and then also who wondered. There were 4,000 children documented as killed or missing over that 100 years, so that there are relatives or families who are carrying that pain. But I think the good thing that was at the end of that short one, about 90, you know, four ways, talking together, having conversations, not making it be we, they, Indigenous or versus, but really having conversations with people who are trying to do things, as well as people who are trying to heal, and just being open to it rather than saying, oh, that was a long time ago, let's just get on with life now. I think just having the heart, and that's part of what the holiday is just to raise our consciousness and our intentions to have different conversations and, you know, in a unified way, look at things one by one. I like the fact, too, it's like instead of there's this whole big thing, but if there's of 90... four things, if there's one thing a day that we could think about doing, it's a positive model for dealing with other things.
It's Delsa here. I am Catholic. I've never heard about this because I wasn't born in this country. Actually, I didn't even hear about this until a month ago when it was on the papers. And I read a little bit about this because I had a hunch, okay, maybe the Roman Catholic has got something to do with this. And I read it, and I read that 60% the Roman Catholic is involved, the other percent out of 100, the government of Canada. So my feeling is, how can it go, how can it would have gone on for 100 years? without anybody saying or investigating about this. The children are the most vulnerable, and to put them in that condition, that is the bottom of the pit, is just not acceptable.
Yeah, the native peoples have known this was going on all the time. Yeah. People went to the police and were basically told to shut up and go away.
Yeah. So for the longest time, I thought my Catholic priests are only guilty about molesting altar boys. And we heard this all the time. I'm sorry to speak like this because I'm getting emotional because, like I said, I'm Catholic. And it goes on and on and on, and it doesn't stop. It's not the First Nation people, but now it's altar boys. And again, my Catholic priests are very much involved, and you don't hear about this. You don't hear about them going to jail. They're just being relocated in some little village. And when they go to little village, what they do there is they get little girls pregnant. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and this happens in the residential schools too. Yeah. It's a huge issue, and it's a systemic issue, right?
Well, Anna, you've had your hand up? Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm a Catholic, and it hurts me to hear that, the Catholic priests and the Catholic Church, for that matter, is involved and complicit in this. But in all fairness, I think there are other religious organizations that are also complicit or guilty. And I have a question too. I mean, I remember, I'm from Vancouver, and I know that this reconciliation, this TRC document, was started in connection with the missing women. Are they two different documents that we're talking about here, or it was the beginning, the birth of this whole inquiry?
Well, those are some things that are happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Some of the issues that haven't been reconciled, that there are hundreds of missing Indigenous women and girls, and crimes that just haven't been solved. So there is a pressure and a push to get those things back out into active solving, having those cases resolved, and to make more people aware of it. I think at Simon Fraser, there was a conversation about it at a number of places. And I think rather than just reading something in the news and saying it's terrible, what this holiday is motivating us to do is to increase our awareness, but then also our commitment to do something. The Prime Minister asked the Pope to ask, make a statement of, forgiveness, ask for forgiveness, or say make an apology. And he just asked the Catholic Church in Canada to do it. And so I think people within that faith are also encountering, there's a place within each of people's churches that were involved to encounter the heads of the church, to encounter them around things they can do. You can't undo death, but you can undo or help with the alcohol programs, the mental health programs, a number of things that would help with the trauma people are still suffering as a result of that. So I think many things do happen within organizations, whether it's religious organizations or business organizations, and people are shocked. So it just means we have to hold our leaders more accountable and then be willing to sit them down to make, there's a force that people that are members of organizations and religions that they can do to make the people in leadership take more responsibility and do what they can do around reconciliation. So if any others of you who are looking at videos or films or look at these 91 days, 91 things that can be done, it doesn't end with today. You can put together ideas and bring them into the pot, because we're creating an agenda of things that we will talk about in the other upcoming weeks. Nancy is one of the podcaster mentors, a part of our production team that helps with planning what we're going to do. Leslie is a historian, a history keeper of what we've done, but also a person open to helping people when you have an idea. We have paired people sometimes around an issue where three people make a presentation. Like we had a group who presented around back here. We had a group last week who presented around meditation, mindfulness. So we can have two or three people within the group. It's like a community. You could talk together, plan something, and, you know, present it or lead it. So definitely be open to emails to me. Nancy could share her email in the chat. You could email her. And Jesse said, don't send me any email. Charlotte sends me enough emails. Jesse helps is the Powered by Age podcast are heard on 9 different platforms. Jesse takes the audio and gets it to there where you can hear it on iTunes. What are some of the other places, Jesse?
Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, on CJSF 90.1 FM, or if you're local, or CJSF.ca if you're outside the broadcast range. There are more. Anchor FM.
You can hear all of the podcasts we've done on our poweredbyage.com website. We also have a special section on there where individuals have recorded their stories or recorded their poetry, and people can go on and just listen to that, have easy listening. So just seeding that idea out as you can begin to give feedback, and we will continue to look at ways that we will not just drop this topic now, but how many of the 94 things we can do and deal with.
Yeah, and talking about moving forward, I'm a member of the Council of Women and the National Council of Women of Canada. For 2 years, their focus was murdered and missing Indigenous women, and they've extended that for another 2 years to focus on First Nations issues. I'm looking at ways we can carry this forward in our local New Westminster Council. There's also a council in Vancouver. As to carry this forward. And this idea of the circles that was brought up in the video is a very interesting idea of bringing people together to discuss the issues.
Also, roundtable discussions, because we've hosted roundtable discussions within the podcast. So maybe from the two groups that you're working with and others, we could have a roundtable discussion as one of our, you know, Thursday podcasts. Okay, so now our next area of awareness is a day we could all be happy with. I think Jesse's the only non-senior, but he's supportive of seniors. Nancy's going to read the United Nations Proclamation.
Thanks, Charlotte. Yeah, I have a little bit of information here. And so December 14th, 1990, the UN General Assembly made October 1st as the International Day of Older Persons, following up on initiatives such as the Vienna International Plan of Action on Aging, which was adopted in 1982 World Assembly on Aging and endorsed later that year by the Assembly. The International Day of Older Persons was observed for the first time throughout the world on October 1st, 1991. And so parts of the proclamation, I won't read all of it, part of it is to promote the implementation of the International Plan of Action on Aging, to support practical strategies for reaching the global targets on aging for the year 2001, to support the continuing efforts of the Secretariat to clarify policy options by improving data collection, research, training, technical cooperation, and information exchange on aging, and to ensure that the aging of populations is adequately addressed in the regular programs of competent United Nations organizations and bodies, to support broad and practical partnerships within the United Nations Program on Aging, including partnerships between governments, specialized agencies, and the United Nations bodies, to strengthen the Trust Fund for Aging as a means of supporting developing countries and adjusting to the aging of their populations, to encourage donor and recipient countries to include older persons in their development programs. And some facts that are quite interesting. Between 2015 and 2050, the proportion of the world's population over 60 years will nearly double from 12 to 22%. by 2020, of course, will pass, the number of people aged 60 years and older will outnumber children younger than 5 years. By 2050, 80% of older people will be living in low and middle income countries. And the pace of population aging is much faster than in the past.